We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
We know this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
So I am here today with my buddy, Chris Lemma, and we're going to talk a little bit about professional relationships and ways that you can use your network as your kind of superpower in business. And I think that Chris is a master at this, and I really enjoyed being at his conference in Cabo, Cabo Press, a couple months ago, and watching him interact with a pretty amazing group of people. So I can't wait to talk with you, Chris, because I've seen sort of firsthand how great you are at surrounding yourself by some pretty amazing folks.
Well, I am glad to be here.
So for anybody who is not in the WordPress space or, you know, has been living under a rock, would you just introduce yourself and say a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am a guy who's been fortunate enough to work in software for the last 21 years. There are all sorts of people that picked their career and through no fault of their own, their career disappeared, right? Like travel agents can't be travel agents anymore, really. I happened to work in software, and particularly I stepped into the web in 1994 when it was just getting started, and we had this idea of hosted applications on the web. And I've been doing that for 21 years. It just so happens that that just never disappeared. It kept going. It changed names a couple times. But hosted applications, today we call them SaaS, are kind of a big deal. And I spent 21 years in the enterprise software space building enterprise SaaS. And just this last week, I accepted a different role to be the vice president of products and innovation at a hosting company, which of course, part of what I'm bringing to this place and what I hope to bring is a better way to deliver SaaS, a better way to build infrastructure so that SaaS providers can leverage it, and how to deliver SaaS to everyday people. So I happen to spend the last 5 or 6 years of my days really focused on the WordPress space and the WordPress community. And that's where, between connecting with people there and between a blog that for about 3 years I wrote every single day, and that combination has afforded me the opportunity to get to know a lot of the WordPress people, a lot of the WordPress players that build products and services in that space.
So you have a pretty rich network of people who you know either from, or sort of they know you, I should say, from the speaking that you've done or from the writing that you've done. And then you have a network of people that you have reached out to and, you know, formed personal relationships with.
So the crazy thing is, when I write, it's under the website and the moniker chrislemma.com, right? And when I'm publicly speaking, I'm introduced as Chris Lemma. And so the real trick, if you're with me at an event and someone walks up, if I know them first as a peer, as a relationship through work, something like that, they will say, "Hi, Chris." If they know me through writing or public speaking, they will address me as Chris Lemma. So it's a real shortcut. It's really easy. Someone goes, "Oh my God, you're Chris Lemma." Then you know that we probably met through the fact that they were reading or listening to my public speaking. But if they walk up and go, "Hey, Chris," then you go, "Oh, he knows them through some sort of work or personal relationship."
So when you look back at your sort of long and pretty fantastic career in the technology world over the last almost 20 years, what role has sort of the relationships that you've cultivated with other people? What has that played? How has that played out in the kinds of positions that you've been offered or the kinds of things that you've had the opportunity to do?
Well, I learned early on the value, right? The currency of relationships, right? And so I had a mentor. I started my professional career at Berkeley National Lab, where we were building the internet, right? In 1994, 95, we were the third fixed subnet of the entire internet. And so I had a mentor there who said, you know, "Here, you're in a lab with 3,000 people. Some of these people are Nobel laureates. These are amazingly smart people. And you can't tell. They don't dress in a way that says, I'm super smart. But these people are all smart. So never assume that because of the way someone's dressed, or because of someone's title, never assume their background or their knowledge. Like, you don't know if that person is amazing and incredible, right? So get to know everyone, right? His take was meet everyone, get to know everyone, find out who they are, and build rapport and relationship, because you don't know when those doors open. So that was his thing. And I was, I don't know, 26, 25, 26. And so I was like, okay, well, that sounds interesting. Over the course of time, what I discovered was everybody else is chasing money, right? Like, oh my God, if I can just get that next raise, if I can get that next job with that next raise, with the assumption that money's going to buy you the things you want. And yet, more often, what I've seen is that money doesn't do it, and that relationships do, right? That fundamentally, whether you're talking about a job and getting recruited to the next position, or you're talking about getting put on a list to get access to something where you're like, please, just whatever it is I have to pay. And they go, no, no, that's not how it works. But then someone makes a phone call for you and opens a door and you're right in, right? And so there are some people out there who are collectors, right? They just want to, they want to go after and get and own as many people as possible, but it can feel really constraining. So I'm not a collector, but a networker, right? Someone who is connecting and interacting with people. I learned that early on. And what I discovered was the more I connect disparate groups, the more value the network has, right? So in the network science, right? And again, this is a book I read probably in 98, 99. There was a book talking about different kinds of people in a network. And what they discovered was you had the normal hub and spoke model that we think of when we think of a network, right? You have someone in the middle and then they have a whole bunch of relationships tied to them. And if you ever went to college, right, and you had to move from the dorms to an apartment, what happened? You had that one guy or that one woman who knew like 40 people that all wanted to live with them. And then they were like, let's get a big enough house for all of us. But there was no connection between the other nodes. They were all connected to the one person. And so that normally the 18 people who wanted to live together fell apart and it ended up being a household of like four or five. And so when you're looking at this network dynamic and you're going, okay, there's a hub and then there's spokes, you have the end nodes around that. What the network topologists, the scientists that were looking at this network topology, what they said was the real value was the connector between two networks, right? So you look at one graph, you look at another graph, and the connector that connects the two, that's where the real value was. And so you read a book and you go, how can I be that guy, right? And so you start finding ways to say, oh, these are really, and so you put your own filters or criteria on, I want to know good people, I want to know smart people, I want to know people with integrity, I want to know people who work hard, I want to know people who aren't kind of living out a victimization narrative in their own mind. But if I get those people over here, and I introduce them to these people over here, I know for a fact they're going to like each other. So invariably what tends to happen when I introduce someone into some of my other friends is they go, you have great friends. And you're like, well, you're cultivating high quality people who are open to meeting other high quality people. So I started that early on. I'm pretty sure that every single job I've had has come through a network, right? I don't apply for jobs. I get recruited in, and normally it's through a relationship to a relationship.
Through someone who knows someone who knows someone who sings your praises.
Yeah. Yeah. And it turns out, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I don't care about all this, then here's the trump card, right? Which is, it is a lot easier to charge a premium for consulting, for a product, for anything, if someone else does the sales for you. So invariably as a coach, as a consultant, if I want the difference between charging $100 an hour and $700 an hour, it's not going to come because I'm singing my own praises. Like if I'm sitting here going, look, I am the greatest. You should pay me because I'm the greatest. That's normally the person you're not paying. But if you talk to five other people who say, that's the guy you need to talk to. In fact, of all the people you need to talk to, there's only one. And if five people tell you the person you need to talk to is Chris Lemma, when they show up and I say, look, I'm really expensive, and they go, I don't care. Five people have sung your praises. Five people independently, without knowing I was talking to them, have all said, there's only one person to talk to, and it's you. So whatever you're going to charge me, just take my money. That's a reason in itself, right? If you're like, I don't care about all that other mushy relationship stuff, it's reason enough to realize there's real value in the network because other people do the qualification and recommendation, and you don't have to do it yourself.
Yeah. So you came to this realization pretty early on in your career that you wanted to be someone who connects high quality people to other high quality people.
Yep.
Are there other strategies that you're intentional about or things that you do on a day to day basis to try to help cultivate a network?
I
know it's so natural for you, I think, at this point. But I think about people who are starting out and who just...
It's an unfair question because you're going to discover how non-natural it is. So everything I do is non-natural. It comes across natural, but it's all specific sets of disciplines. The good news being that anybody
can. So spill the secrets.
Yeah. The bad news is it's a lot of work. So for example, if you're going to go to an event, how many times do you say, oh, I'm going to go to that conference, but have you pored over the attendee list? Have you looked over every single attendee who's going to be there and then gone and looked at all of their backgrounds to figure out who is there and who would I like to meet? Have you looked at every attendee? Have you looked at every sponsor? Have you dug into each of those companies and tried to understand their narrative, understand their story, so that when you walk up to someone's booth and they say, hi, we're so-and-so, and you go, yeah, you guys are the ones that do X, Y, and Z, and they go, oh my gosh, you know us. Now let's talk to you. The moment you say something about them, they open the kimono. They go further than they normally would because they're no longer in sales mode. Now they're in friendship mode. You know us. You like us. Let's go further. So did you do that work? Did you look at every vendor at an event? Did you look at every attendee at an event? Did you make a list of five people that you're like, I'm not leaving this event until I've met them? Sometimes that means literally emailing them in advance saying, I see that you're going to be here. This is what I know about you. This is my background. I would love, could I take you to dinner on Thursday night? If they're popular, they're not going to want to go to dinner with you because they're popular and they preferably want to hang out with their friends. So how do you say, well, what about lunch? What about an early morning breakfast? What's your favorite coffee? So how deliberate are you about meeting people in person? Because meeting them face to face opens the door to a bunch of relationship offline. I would love to invite you to speak at my conference. I would love to send you an email. But if Chris Lemma sends Sherry Walling an email and she's never met the guy, you're going to be like, well, that's cute. Thank you for thinking of me. And now move on, right? But after you've met in person and spent time, then you're like, you know what? I'm willing to get an email from you. I'm willing to get an email from you because I've seen you face to face. So how often when you go to some place do you say, not only have I done all the research, but also I have a targeted list. So now you're thinking back, right? Now you're thinking back to our time. We were both together at the Double Your Freelance Conference, right? And now you're starting to think, okay, maybe Chris was a stalker, right? Maybe Chris actually knew that I was going to be there before I got there. Maybe he knew that he had plans to come and sit next to me. Maybe he knew he was going to have a conversation and we were going to chat. Okay, now all the things I thought were natural are now feeling not as natural. And you go, you're right, they're not. They're all explicitly focused effort. But none of them for a negative perspective, none of them for Machiavellian reason. It's because you're saying, this is a person that I believe is high quality, and I would like to go connect so that later when I write an email, they're not going to dump it into their spam folder right away. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think that's such an important message for people who might be listening to this who are thinking, oh, you know, I'm a freelancer. I sort of work on my own. I'm used to being on my own, or I'm an introvert and it's just really hard for me to, you know, get going in a conversation in a group of people. But there are these steps that you're using that are very strategic around doing your research, being prepared, and then even, you know, sort of having a game plan going into a conference or an event. It also sounds like, Chris, like you prioritize opportunities to be in the same room with people.
Yes. Yes. Because I know that just sending people email or Twitter DMs or whatever is, we are still human beings, right? So for as much as all the digital world, and I live in the digital world, but for as much as that moves forward, the reality is my social media relationship with someone is not a relationship. It is text on a screen, but that's not a relationship. So we all have our own internal gatekeepers on how we manage our time and how our prickly little nerves pop up when someone's trying to be too close when they're not in person and we haven't met. So I know that what can come off as stalkerish if I'm just online now comes across as friendship if I've met them in person, which means out of my own pocket, I have to invest in going places where those people are going to be. But it also means I don't go to places that I think would be tons of fun that have no end game for me. So I am ridiculously cutthroat about where I spend my time. And people say, oh, but are you coming to this event? And I go, nope. Oh, why not? It'll be a lot of fun. That's not my objective, right? I don't live for fun. I live for building my relationships, build my rapport, build my network. And then when I have my network, then I plan vacations with my friends because that's a lot of fun. I would rather spend my fun that way than let me just go hang out somewhere and see what happens. I don't like chance.
You want to know that you're going to sort of push your agenda forward, your agenda being cultivating a group of really smart, interesting people who are competent. And
here's the truth, right? My objective is not always driven by, I want them to speak at my conference, right? That happens once a year. I have agendas where it's just, I say, I think that company would do incredible if they knew that other person. but they don't know that person. And so first I have to get to know them so that I can connect them with someone else. Once I connect them with someone else, they're going to turn their dime. And then when they turn and they're successful, they're going to look back and go, this is all because of Chris, right? And you go, that's great. But that's going to take, that's three moves of chess, right? So my superpower, networking is a component of it. My superpower is I play human chess, right? So I'm thinking 3, 4, 5, 10 steps out. I'm looking at the lay of the land and I'm going, what does Sherry need for Sherry to take off, right? And the truth is Sherry was already taking off. Sherry was doing amazing stuff. But then Sherry changed locations. And now the new location is going to create new opportunity. And is there new people I could introduce to that would open the door for new opportunities? Okay, so now you land there, then you back up. Well, what would that require? So it's like anything else. You're thinking through, how can I be helpful? And so what I tell folks who are building rapport is, do not show up with a, hi, you're famous. You are super awesome. I love you. And here's all the things I want from you. Because it doesn't matter if you're meeting in person at that point. People are like, you're a little strange. Why don't you back up a few feet? It's really, can you be helpful? Can you be helpful in a targeted and specific way? Can you offer connection, relationship, advice? Everybody and their brother needs something. Is there someone in your network that you can offer them? Is there some relationship, some connection you can offer them that will make things better? And so I was at a conference this last week, very, very large conference, and I met a woman that I hadn't talked to in 6 or 7 months. And I said, how's your startup business? And she said, well, I'm doing this part okay, but I don't have this part set up right. And I said, I know the perfect woman whose her customers are your customers, right? The two of you are well aligned doing two different things. Can I connect the two of you? Can I introduce you, right? So that potentially you can take off and your business can take off. And she's like, that would be great, right? And I'm happy to do it without any expectation of what comes back, right? Because I just know that the more I'm connecting, and those are two very different networks, the one that she's in and the one that the other one's in, are completely separate spaces. But that's where it's really powerful too, because if they were really close, then this gal probably would have already connected with those prospective clients. But the fact that they're removed and there's a loose connection through me now means there's a greater opportunity for their growth, right? Because now they're able to expose their opportunities to people that they hadn't been before, right? So understanding, okay, where can I help? Where can I connect dots? How can I come alongside and be helpful? In the long run, you have to trust that that all pays its own dividends, right? That I have a broad network. There's always going to be haters in the world. There's always going to be someone who says something negative. I know I don't have to stress about it because I have a huge network of people who will listen to that and go, you're wrong. You're wrong. He's a good guy. He's helped me. Right. And so that's my currency.
And are there strategies that you are intentional about in terms of keeping relationships healthy? You know, over the course of many years of the ins and outs of doing business with people or watching people succeed and fail. And I can imagine that there's some ups and downs in the relationships that you've had over the years.
Yeah. You can't get close without stepping on someone's toes. Right. You just can't. So maybe the most important thing is knowing that the person on the other end knows how to have a healthy discussion about conflict or a healthy discussion about boundaries or a healthy discussion about feeling hurt, right? If a person is grounded enough to say, I appreciate the potential to work together, but I really want to try this on my own and I have my own plan. Knowing that they can say that and being able to back up and say, okay, good luck, let me know how it goes, is critical. Because if they start doing things because they're like, well, your vision was so grand, I started living your life for me instead of my own life. And you go, whoa, red flag. Even if it feels good that someone else is listening to you, if you're not watching that, like, I don't think we're two individuals talking. I think someone is getting codependent or losing themselves in the midst of that. That's not going to be good for me in the long run, right? That's going to be a challenge. And so you have to individuate, you have to break back and put a little boundary in that space. And so I'm constantly evaluating for the strength of character. I'm evaluating for a person who can stand on their own and have their own boundary. Because if not, it's going to get messy and then it's going to be my fault, however it ends up. So you got to learn how to watch for that, right? People who can disagree, right? We just had one of the most ridiculously crazy elections in the world, right? And there are three kinds of people. There are people who think my way is the only way and everybody else is an idiot. There are people who are like, this whole thing's crazy. I don't care. I don't want to deal with it. I'm going to stick my head in the sand. And there's people who say, well, I have a perspective. But I also know there's probably people on the other side of the line that have a perspective. And while I probably can't agree with all of it, I can figure out where we can connect and agree on certain things and where we can hope for something. I want to interact with a third group, right? I don't want to interact with the people who are like my way or the highway. I don't want to interact with people who stick their head in the sand. I want to interact with the people who can have an intelligent conversation. And the easiest way to evaluate that is to have an intelligent conversation about anything, right?
And that's going to be a tell for you about whether or not this is someone that you're going to have a sort of a long-term working relationship with, or someone who is going to come and go from your life.
Yeah. The other thing is, people play by their own rules, right? Everybody has their own internal compass. Everyone has their own set of rules. And what I've discovered is there's no global set, as much as I would love there to be, right? Like, let's say that you introduce me to the person who helps you with this podcast, right? Helps you with the digital technology related to the sound quality and whatever else. Let's say you introduce me to them. So I have a general rule. I'm not going to poach them. They're yours. If they choose to quit you and to go looking for work, and then they happen to call me because at some point we met, I will first call you and say, hey, is this cool? Right? We learned this in like junior high. You don't date someone else's girlfriend or boyfriend, ex-girlfriend or boyfriend. Like, so to me, this is just like basics, right? Not everybody lives in that world, right? And so I quickly evaluate. This is one of those lessons when you're building relationships over the long term. I'm evaluating their compass and their structures are not as extensive as mine. And I just have to put them in a box that's a little bit different and say, there's certain things I'll bring them into, and there are probably other things I won't, because they're not playing by the same rules I'm playing. And to me, that's been very helpful to be protective about parts of the network, because you bring someone in who's playing by a different set of rules and it can go south really fast.
Sure. You kind of assess someone, or you assess your ability to trust someone based on, to some extent, the shared values that you both have.
That's right.
And those are values about how you work together, about how you treat people, kind of the unwritten code of healthy human interaction.
What I used to call integrity, until we discovered that people define that in lots of different ways. And then you're like, I need a new word. Okay, well, just my rules, right? But yeah, I'm looking for, and I'm evaluating. And it doesn't mean that I don't do business or I don't build relationship with people who don't match mine exactly. It just means I'm aware of that as a dynamic in the relationship.
Well, it sounds like you're creating, to some extent, like tiers of relationships. Like you have an inner circle that you talk about a lot and are quite public about, sort of this group of five or six folks who they're your speed dial, they're your core people.
Yep.
And then you have, other layers of how trustworthy or how integrated someone is into the nuts and bolts of your daily life.
So there's an actual picture. There's an actual, like, if you draw what looks like a dartboard of concentric circles, there's a circle that's the inner circle, that's number one, and then the next round is two and three and four. And then I draw a big cross in the middle of it, so I have four quadrants, and there's family, and there's work, and there's long-term life vision and goals, and there's church or whatever social construct you might have. And in every one, people are either moving out or moving in, and that's by my choice. So I am extremely strategic and focused on managing the concentric circles of the relationships. And my family is aware of that. My family works in that cycle. So my wife has had to learn the concentric circle thing. My friends, over years, when they move, a pair of really good friends, we started a company together. He was clearly in circle one or two for several years. And then he moved across the country and he went to another job. And he looked at me as we were having drinks, as he was getting ready to leave. He goes, this is going to push me into concentric circle three or four, right? And I go, yeah, it doesn't mean we're not friends, right? It just means that we're not going to talk day to day. We don't have a shared vision of what we're trying to, our objective for work or for life. Like, so yeah, we're going to pull you out. But that doesn't mean we don't connect once a year. And at some point every 5 years, we might try and do a vacation together. But yes, you're moving out. And the truth is, people do not have any issue when you're honest and consistent about the strategies you use in your life for relationships. It's when there's miscommunication, indirect communication, false promise, unmanaged expectation, that's when people get hurt, because they thought they were in your inner circle and you thought, not a chance, right? Boy, there's a problem there. So I go to a lot of conferences and I have what are called lemma dinners. I will invite 8, 10, 12 people to a meal that I'll pay for and that we'll just hang out and have dinner that night. And people know, oh, there's a whole process to get invited. And then just because I got invited one doesn't mean they get invited to another, right? But there's some people who know you're far enough in that you're invited. Like, if you're in town, we're having dinner, right? And it's about managing that expectation. So when you say, I have some friends, that are meeting. We meet every time we're together, but we have a couple seats at the table we'd love to fill up. You'd have a great time joining us. Would you like to do it? Well, in that communication, I'm not saying, would you want to be my best friend? I'm saying, we have a couple spots at the table. Would you like to join us today, right? And people go, that'd be great. I'd love to go to that dinner, right? So it's very, very, very clear and articulate and strategic about how I manage those relationships.
It's fascinating. I'm just enjoying how articulate you are about how strategic you are. You know, I think a lot of people kind of do these things. They're sort of managing these kinds of dynamics, but they haven't sort of brought it to the forefront of their mind to really give it some sort of laid out strategy. And I think that's one of the things that you do really well in your game of human chess is to be very intentional about how you're spending your time, your money, you know, and how you're cultivating the different relationships that are available to you.
I think when you're not that clear, I think you open yourself up to trying to juggle it in your head and juggle it in your life and seeing if it works out. And then invariably someone's going to get hurt, right? And this is how we all get hurt, right? Is you thought you were in one place, like you thought you were friends with a group of people and you totally thought, and then they just did a random, like, we're going to do a girls' night out. And then you don't get invited and the pictures are on Facebook and you're like, oh my God, what happened? Like, how come I'm not in that group? And then you sit around for days stewing, and now you've put them all on a special list, and you're never going to hang out with them again, and you're definitely not going to tell them what's going on in your family because of the, and all this happened because one person forgot to put your name on because they were just juggling it in their head, and they weren't thinking about it, and they didn't have a list, and they didn't do it. And I go, there are certain things I care a lot about. Relationships are one of them. And so if I care a lot about it, I ought to be structured and focused and deliberate, right? So
you ought to bring your A game.
I got to bring my A game. And relationships are one of those where I think it's critical.
So how does your conference fit into your relationship plan?
So I run a conference that was designed specifically because most conferences are like 8 or 9 hours of speakers, and you cannot possibly process all that material at once. And so I said, I don't want to be another conference like that. So there's only 2 sessions a day. It happens over the course of 3 hours. And after those 2 sessions, the rest of the day is free, which gives you a lot of time to process. But some of that processing doesn't happen alone. Sometimes it happens with other people. And so you want to give the freedom and the time for people to interact with each other. And that helps you cement the takeaway. What's the aha? What's the thing I want to do? So I crafted a conference that only had 3 hours of material, and the material itself is not all delivered by one person. So it's not speakers. They are dialogue facilitators, and they obviously are experts, but some people will pick up an idea from the person standing next to them because of this discussion and just go, oh my God, that's the missing piece I needed, right? So I just want to facilitate those relationships by limiting how many people come and by limiting how the discussion works. You create a lot of opportunity for people to build rapport. You can't force it. So invariably every year, there's someone who says, I would have gotten a lot more out if I came out of my shell earlier. The first day, I really just held back. By the second day, I started coming out. Third day was amazing. It was on me. They don't get upset at me because they know I created the facility for them. But they go, next time, I really got to come out of my shell earlier. But by giving so much social time, I'm giving them the time to be relational. So then the trick, if you walk away from the schedule part of it, the real trick is you got to get the right people in the room. You got to get the right people. And by room, I mean a pool, because we do it in a pool. But you got to get the right people there, which means the stage of their life, the stage of their business, the stage of their success. You're working to get the right pieces on the board so that these people can have these conversations. If you bring someone who's like 10 years in front of them or 10 years behind them or even 4 years behind them, that rapport and relationship and that dialogue is not necessarily going to be the same. So there's a lot that goes into picking the right people and putting them in the room together.
Well, you are excellent at that, friend. And thanks for sort of throwing down the wisdom and sharing with our Zen Founder audience some of the strategies that you use. If people want to glean more of your great ideas, how do they find you online?
I write over at chrislemma.com. And I also have a leadership blog over at beyondgood.com, though I think that's going to be switching over to leaders.blog soon. And I'm on Twitter. That's the easiest way to find me. I'm on Twitter at Chris Lemma, and people can always connect that way.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.